Here with me in this interview, I have Dave Litson and Randy Kramer with KL Process Design Group. And I'm going to confess, guys, I'm not real familiar with what you do. So I want to first of all ask, and we'll do this as a tag team here, so whoever wants to can jump in and answer. Tell me, first of all, just what does KL Process Design Group do?
KL Process Design Group is a biofuels engineering firm located in Rapid City, South Dakota. We have the ability to manage, operate plants, and we also market the ethanol that comes from these plants. Our hallmark, I suppose, is process design. We not only design corn ethanol plants, and we've done three or four active plants at this point in our business, but we also have developed, we believe, the first wood waste to ethanol plant in the United States, possibly the world. It's running as we sit here and speak today. I see a lot of information out here about proposed plants and thoughts and processes going on. We're in the middle of the commissioning and the startup right now, so we're up and we're down, but we've actually made ethanol from Ponderosa Pine in the Black Hills, and we believe KL will make a name for itself doing that.
Well, I would think so. I mean, the question's been posed here probably half a dozen times today of different speakers about when we think we're going to see a commercially viable process or production facility, but it sounds like you might have a different answer than some of them.
I think so. I think we've been underneath the radar screen since we started the development back in 2001, 2002, in conjunction with the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. It's an engineering firm, a school in Rapid City. That was where the bench scale, lab scale activity occurred, which once we achieved 45 gallons per dry ton of wood, that is what drove it out of the lab into the demonstration unit that we're talking about.
So what is it that has gotten you to this point? I mean, you've obviously done a lot of work on this, testing, research, and obviously your own design. What kind of, where would you credit what's gotten you to this point and quickly or maybe ahead of the curve, if you will?
Well, this whole technology, like Randy said, was developed with South Dakota School of Mines. I am a alumnus of the School of Mines, chemical engineer in 1981, and it was the association with that school and some of the expertise found within it that really enabled us to project forward some technology development that we ourselves didn't have the expertise. Now, my background is in oil and chemical production, formerly with Shell Oil, but yet some of the processes necessary to break down the and pre-treat the material that we're eventually going to ferment to ethanol required some expertise that we didn't help, and certainly the School of Mines provided that.
You said you've got this process to a point where you're producing ethanol. Where are you going next? I mean, what's kind of like the next step for you then?
Well, I think where we're at now is really proving out the equipment, running continuously, producing alcohol. The next step really is to take some of the things we learned in the laboratory, very solid data, and start integrating those improvements in this process. So the plant that we built, even though it shows very well as a commercial or pre-commercial facility designed for 1.5 to 2 million gallons a year of alcohol, for us it really still is a research facility.
So then as you refine this process or this plant, what are you planning to take that to other companies that want to build a plant and they need a design or a process that's going to work for them? Will it be something that can be designed to fit different locations and maybe even types of feedstock?
Right. I think looking at the business model for us going forward, it won't be the 50-100 million gallon a year corn ethanol plants that you see out there now. These are more going to be designed to back in, for instance, to say a warehouse or sawdust pile, where that sawdust might have come from the plywood operation or the OSB board that they were making. We did a tour of the Hudson Bay facility up in Canada, and Weyerhaeuser is waiting for us to raise our hand and say, where did they go? We've talked to them about the process. But here you would have large piles of sawdust just self-combusting, and they have to worry about how to spread that back on the land. So we would take a 5 to maybe even 10 million gallon a year facility like this, and it is very manageable as far as sizing. and back something like this into an operation like that, or a city landfill where you're taking grass clippings and tree branches, for instance, in Arlington, Virginia here. We were approached by the municipality the last time we were here with the EPA. They're asking about the process. So we think that is the model going forward as opposed to the large facilities out there. A lot more opportunities out there for that, too.
Who would you see as your customers then?
Well, anybody that's in the silvicultural business, and what that means, if you've got a company out there that's out there actively thinning the underbrush, the thinnings in the national forest, for instance, and I'm just going to use that as an example, instead of burning those piles that they form, we would take those, grind them up, and move them to the facility. That's probably the worst case, and I say the worst case just from a cost perspective of getting it to the plant, but we feel that it's better to move it to the plant as opposed to paying somebody to manage it in the forest and watch it burn, control burn, so to speak. Sierra Club's behind this too, by the way. We've talked to them, and they find this a very nice opportunity that fits with their model also, because it creates a clean burning fuel. But to go back and answer your question a little bit more fully is that the potential customers other than the silviculturists are going to be these wood mills and any place that you would have the byproduct sitting around worrying about how they're going to distribute it or landfill it or burn it for that matter. We can do both. We'll make ethanol from it, and those lignin byproduct particles can be burned back in the biomass boiler, freeing ourselves really from all fossil fuels to run the plant, now, of course, to provide the steam for the distillation system. All that would come from the lignin boiler. And that's not new science. That's been around for quite some time, actually.
So your process, does it then answer some of the concerns that people have for this, for the production of ethanol, even whether it's grain or cellulosic, that, you know, in terms of the environment, in terms of water use and, you know, a whole host of those, how do you address some of the concerns those people have?
Well, for instance, on the corn side, and I'm going to let Dave talk about the water, because that's two big issues that we discuss all the time. Certainly from a food versus a fuel debate, this completely mitigates or puts that argument to rest, as you can tell. I mean, that's one aspect, and that just quickly goes away. But I'm going to let Dave talk about the water consumption issue because he has designed a zero-discharge plant, and I'm going to let him talk about that.
Well, most of our experience to date, Randy and I together with our company, has been with corned ethanol plants. So we've learned a lot about a fermentation design and designing an efficient and energy efficient and water efficient process around that type of technology, that type of process. One thing that's helped us extremely in getting involved in this business as quickly as we did is through the route of process simulation. It's a technique, a tool actually, that the oil and chemical industry is used for decades, and it seems that it's a tool not necessarily neglected in this industry, but maybe not used to its full potential. This is something that really did enable us to, for instance, with the very first plant we got involved with in Sutherland, Nebraska, really reverse engineer it and re-engineer it in a way that could be, and I don't know this for sure, but we have a strong feeling that it could be the most energy efficient corn to ethanol plant in the U.S. We will take those same techniques and tools to build around a cellulosic feedstock ethanol facility as well. That it would include water minimization, and in the very last panel discussion we heard some discussion about water, and really most of the water, 60% of the water in a corn to ethanol plant is lost to evaporative cooling. So we can look at techniques that don't involve really a loss of water, if you want to use that term, even though the water is not lost, it's simply changed phases and displaced a little. But nonetheless, there are going to be techniques developed. I'm sure other companies are working very hard on these as well, but within the process simulation environment, I think it's going to help us accelerate to larger solutions more quickly.
From a consumer perspective, what would you like the consuming public, the average person on the street who's concerned about where they're going to get fuel, that they're going to have it, and probably today becoming more aware of where that comes from, but what should they know about what you're doing?
Well, just that it's different. Again, it's a component of a larger energy strategy. And one thing, the next time that someone pulls up at the pump, they may not know that ethanol came from a cornfield or a forest. But you can bet that if they understand what we're doing out there, and they can compare a forest fire, for instance, to being able to take that thinning and put it in their gas tank through an ethanol plant, that's a big statement on the environment, I think. And I think that's what we want to put in people's minds, that it won't come from just one source. There'll be many out there.
Well, thank you very much. That's Randy Kramer and Dave Litson with KL Process Design Group. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.